Lowe's early Black Friday deals are going fast. Don't miss up to 50% off select major appliances. Plus, up to an extra 25% off when you bundle select major appliances. And with Christmas around the corner, you're going to need more string lights, right? Save $4 on GE LED 100-count string lights, now just $5.98. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 12/3. Selection varies by location. Select locations only. While supplies last. See Lowe's.com for more details.
This is a True Crime in Real Time update from True Crime Today and the Hidden Killers podcast.
I still do love her, but I'm very angry. That's the quote that stopped everyone in their tracks. Kevin Franca, the husband of convicted child abuser Ruby Franca, still loves the woman who starved, tortured, and tied up their children. His words weren't taken out of context. He wasn't manipulated into saying them. This wasn't some misguided plea for sympathy. This was Kevin standing in front of a camera in the year 2024, openly admitting that after everything, after the arrests, the trials, the gut-wrenching testimonies of his own children, some part of him still loved her. And for a lot of people, that wasn't just shocking. It was infuriating. Because this wasn't a fleeting romance. This was a 20-year marriage built on family, faith, and eventually a multi-million dollar YouTube empire that showcased their perfect life. A marriage that, according to Kevin, had love, right up until the day his wife was hauled away in handcuffs for crimes so appalling that even seasoned investigators called them some of the worst cases of child abuse they'd ever seen. So why did Kevin stay? Why did he remain legally married to Ruby after her arrest? And why, even now, with the whole world knowing what she did, does he still struggle to sever that last emotional tie? To understand Kevin Franca's continued attachment to his wife, we have to go back to the beginning of their marriage, to the rise of their family vlog, and ultimately to the years leading up to Ruby's descent into extremist parenting. Because Kevin's story isn't just about love, it's about denial, regret, and the devastating consequences of standing by the wrong person for too long. Kevin met Ruby back in 2000. It was a whirlwind. He was drawn to her immediately. Her confidence, her charm, the way she seemed so sure of herself. Within months, they were married. That's not unusual in their community. They were both devoted members of The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, where family is everything and divorce isn't exactly encouraged. For Kevin, the path forward was clear: marriage, kids, faith, stability. And for a while, that's exactly what they had. They built a life together. 6 kids, a home. He worked as a professor. She stayed home and raised the children. Then came 8 Passengers. For the uninitiated, 8 Passengers was a YouTube channel, one of those wholesome, family-friendly vlogs that people watched religiously. The Francas filmed everything: morning routines, vacations, discipline, parenting advice. And with Ruby at the helm, the channel exploded. At its peak, they were making up to $100,000 a month. It seemed like the American dream, but behind the scenes, something was shifting. As the vlogs gained traction, Ruby's parenting style became a lightning rod for controversy. She was strict. That was her brand. But strict turned into harsh, and harsh turned into cruel. Viewers started raising red flags. Clips went viral of Ruby proudly declaring that she refused to feed her young son lunch because he forgot to pack it. That another son had been sleeping on the floor for months as punishment. That a daughter had to forgo Christmas presents to teach her a lesson. It wasn't subtle. Millions of people saw it. And Kevin? He was right there, in the background of those videos. Sometimes agreeing, sometimes silent, but never stopping it. So the question is, why? Kevin says now that he regrets it. That vlogging his family, putting their kids' private lives online, was a mistake. That he thinks about it every single day. But back then, he wasn't seeing what the rest of the world saw. Maybe it was because he was too close? Maybe it was because the money was too good? Maybe it was because when you build a brand around being a perfect parent, the last thing you want to admit is that your parenting might be deeply, dangerously flawed. Even when Child Protective Services got involved, yes, CPS was called on them, nothing really changed. Because for years, Kevin and Ruby had one big thing on their side. They looked normal. Think about it. When you picture an abusive household, you probably don't imagine an affluent, well-groomed Mormon family with a popular YouTube channel and a seemingly loving marriage. You don't picture a dad with a PhD and a mom who bakes cookies on camera. You don't picture suburban Utah. But that's exactly why it was able to go on for so long. By the time Kevin realized just how deep Ruby had sunk into her radical parenting beliefs, it was too late. In 2022, after more than 20 years of marriage, Kevin moved out. But here's the key part. He didn't leave Ruby, not officially, not emotionally. Even after everything, he still thought they could work things out. And this is where Kevin's decision-making starts to look a lot less like love and a lot more like denial. Because in 2023, when Ruby and her so-called counselor, Jody Hildebrandt, escalated to the horrific abuse that finally got them arrested, Kevin was still legally tied to Ruby, still waiting, still hoping on some level that this was all something they could recover from. Then the unthinkable happened. One of their children escaped. A neighbor called 911. The police arrived, and what they found inside the home was beyond disturbing. A starving child, bruised, emaciated, bound with duct tape. The kind of thing you see in horror movies, except this wasn't a movie. This was real life. And this was the moment Kevin should have woken up, but instead, he hesitated. While the rest of the world was reeling, while his wife was arrested and facing charges that could put her away for decades, Kevin didn't file for divorce. Not immediately. Not even in the weeks that followed. He issued a statement saying he was shocked and devastated, but he didn't cut the cord. It wasn't until months later, after Ruby was convicted, after the extent of the abuse was laid out in court, that Kevin finally took steps to legally separate. And that's when he dropped that now infamous line, "I still do love her, but I'm very angry." What do you even do with that? How do you process a man saying out loud that he still loves the person who tortured his children? How do you even begin to wrap your head around that level of emotional conflict? Kevin isn't dumb. He knows how bad that sounds. He knows how the public sees him. He's said in interviews that he's been raked over the coals for not walking away sooner. He's admitted that the question of why he didn't step in eats him alive. But at the end of the day, no matter how much regret he feels, it doesn't change what happened. It doesn't change the fact that his inaction had consequences. And whether you see him as a man who is manipulated, a man who was weak, or a man who was just too blind for too long, one thing is clear. Kevin Frank's love for Ruby didn't save their marriage. It just destroyed his family. And that's where we leave him. Not as a villain, not as a hero. Just as a man. A man who made the wrong choices at the worst possible time. But Kevin's story doesn't end here, because what happened inside the Franca household wasn't just about one couple's toxic marriage. It was about control. And Kevin wasn't the only one Ruby controlled. Kevin Franca wasn't just a man in a bad marriage. He wasn't just a husband in denial. He was a man trapped in a system of control so insidious that by the time he realized what was happening, he was already drowning in it. And at the center of that system, like a black hole pulling everything into its orbit, was Jody Hildebrandt. Most people hadn't heard of Jody before the Ruby Franca case broke, but in certain circles, she was already infamous. She called herself a therapist, a counselor, a mentor. She ran a program called Connexions, a supposedly faith-based self-improvement system that promised clarity, healing, and truth. What it actually did was isolate people, destroy relationships, and turn family members against each other. Kevin didn't find Jody, Ruby did. And by the time Kevin realized what that meant, it was already too late. The first time Kevin met Jody, she was introduced as a marriage counselor. That's what Ruby told him. Their marriage was struggling and Jody was going to help. So Kevin, like a lot of men in troubled marriages, agreed to counseling. He didn't know that walking into Jody's world meant losing control over his own life. At first, the process seemed standard. Tough, but standard. Jody had rules, strict ones, about honesty, integrity, responsibility. She was aggressive, but that could be a good thing, right? Kevin wanted to believe that, but then the rules got stranger. Jody started separating Kevin and Ruby during their sessions, insisting that they be counseled individually. Kevin didn't understand why at the time. It would take him months to realize that this was step one in Jody's playbook: isolate, divide, and conquer. Because when you split people up, they can't compare notes. They can't figure out that what's happening to them isn't normal. After just a few months, Ruby wasn't just attending conexions, she was living by it. Jody's ideology wasn't just influencing her, it was consuming her. She started speaking differently, thinking differently. Rules became doctrine. Parenting became punishment. Everything, according to Ruby, had to be about purity, accountability, and eliminating darkness. And Kevin? He was the darkness. Jody convinced Ruby that Kevin was holding her back spiritually, that his very presence in the home was hindering their family's progress toward righteousness. Kevin wasn't just a husband in a rough patch. He was a problem that needed to be removed. So Jody gave Ruby a solution. Get rid of him. And that's exactly what Ruby did. By 2022, Kevin wasn't just struggling in his marriage, he was out of his own home. He was exiled by order of his wife and her so-called therapist. The official reasoning? He needed time to reflect, to do his own work, to earn his way back. And Kevin, God help him, believed it. Because when you're deep in a system like this, when your wife and your marriage counselor and your church community are all telling you the same thing, that you are the problem, that you need to change, it stops feeling like manipulation. It feels like truth. So Kevin went along with it. He moved out. He started attending Connexion's classes himself. He did the work. He wanted to fix things. But there was no fixing this. Because while Kevin was out trying to better himself, Ruby was getting worse and worse. And at some point, Ruby and Jody stopped seeing themselves as counselors or teachers. They became prophets. Kevin later recalled moments that at the time he wanted to dismiss but now haunt him. Ruby and Jody sitting together in locked rooms for hours, whispering, praying, claiming to have visions. One day they'd emerge and say they had a message from God. The next they'd declare that one of the children was being controlled by Satan. To Kevin, it was religious devotion, intense but still within the realm of faith. But Ruby and Jody weren't practicing faith anymore. They were creating a cult inside their own home. Kevin, from the outside, could see glimpses of it. But every time he tried to re-enter his own family, Jody would move the goalpost. There was always something more he needed to do. He needed to prove himself, to cleanse his own soul, to repent. He was given tasks. One of them was blessing Jody nightly because, according to her, she was under spiritual attack. She'd sit in her room, shaking, crying, telling Kevin that she could feel demonic energy invading her body. Kevin, who by this point had been mentally ground down to the point of submission, would comply. He'd lay hands on her, he'd pray, he'd perform the rituals she demanded. Looking back, Kevin says he was trying to find a way back to his family, trying to win back Ruby, trying to undo whatever darkness they believed he carried, but now it's painfully clear that there was no way back because he was never supposed to come back. Jody had taken control of Ruby, and Ruby had replaced Kevin with her. There was no marriage left, no family left. There was only Jody and Ruby, locked in a loop of extremism, dragging everyone else down with them. And Kevin? Kevin was just another victim. If you're wondering how the hell he didn't see it sooner, you're not alone. He wonders the same thing. He's admitted as much. That when he finally pulled back, when he finally saw it for what it was like waking up from a fog. His attorney later put it more bluntly. Kevin was manipulated and deceived. By the time Kevin realized what was happening, Ruby was too far gone. She wasn't his wife anymore. She was Jody's disciple. And the worst part? The people who suffered the most, who were hurt the deepest, weren't Kevin. They were his children. Kevin Franca has spent the past year trying to prove one thing, that he's not the villain of this story. He's not the abusive parent. He's not the one who locked his child in a basement, starved them, tied them up. He's not the one in prison. And yet, people still wonder, how much did he know? How much did he ignore? And how much of what happened to his children is on him? Because here's the uncomfortable truth. Kevin Franca may not have been the abuser, but he was there. Not in the final months, when things became truly nightmarish. But in the years before, when Ruby's parenting style started shifting from strict to cruel, when red flags were waving in full force, when people, complete strangers, neighbors, even their own children were saying something is wrong, Kevin was there, and he didn't stop it. And that's where the divide begins. Some people believe Kevin was complicit. a passive enabler who failed his kids by standing by while Ruby's methods escalated. Others see him as another victim, manipulated, isolated, and emotionally broken down to the point where he didn't realize what was happening until it was too late. So which is it? Was Kevin Franca a father who failed his children? Or was he just another person swallowed whole by the world Ruby built? The answer depends on who you ask. The case against Kevin is straightforward. He was married to Ruby for 2 decades, and for at least the last few years of their marriage, her parenting was a problem that wasn't exactly happening in secret. She broadcasted it. She talked about her extreme punishments on 8 Passengers like they were great parenting moments. She looked right into the camera and said she refused to bring lunch to her 6-year-old at school because he needed to learn accountability. She made vlogs explaining why one of their sons had been sleeping on the floor for 7 months. And Kevin? He wasn't just in the background. He was a willing participant in the family brand. He was in the videos. He smiled along. He sat there while Ruby talked about their parenting methods, while viewers in the comments section begged someone to intervene. Because by 2020, the concern wasn't just coming from the internet. Child Protective Services was called multiple times and nothing happened. And maybe that's what Kevin was clinging to. Maybe when CPS showed up and didn't remove the kids, he saw it as proof that they weren't doing anything wrong. But that's not how this works. Just because abuse isn't caught in the moment doesn't mean it isn't happening. Kevin should have known that. Because the people who did know, the ones raising the alarm, were his own kids. Their eldest daughter, Sherry, was the first to pull away. She cut off contact with her parents in 2021, long before Ruby's arrest, and she wasn't quiet about why. In her own words, she was getting out of an unhealthy environment. That should have been a wake-up call. Instead, Kevin stayed. He stayed when his wife became more controlling. He stayed when the punishments got more extreme. He stayed when Ruby fell under Jody Hildebrandt's influence, when she started talking about demons and purity and the need to cleanse their children of darkness. And then, when Jody told Ruby to get rid of him, he left. Which brings us to the other side of the argument. Kevin didn't just let Ruby have control of the house. He didn't just hand over the kids, he was forced out. By the time Ruby fully embraced Jody's teachings, Kevin wasn't making the rules anymore. He wasn't even allowed in his own home. The way Kevin tells it, Jody manipulated both of them. She turned Ruby into an extremist, and she turned Kevin into an outsider. And this isn't just his perspective. This is what cult experts and psychologists have said. Jody's program wasn't traditional therapy. It was coercive control, designed to isolate people from their loved ones. That's what she did to Kevin. She cut him off, told him he was the problem, made him believe he had to earn his way back into his own family. And when he tried, when he followed the rules, went to the classes, did the work, Jody kept moving the goalposts. There was no way back. He wasn't just kicked out of his own home. He was kept out. So, from that perspective, what exactly was Kevin supposed to do? Could he have fought harder for his kids? Maybe. Probably. But how do you fight someone who has already decided you're the enemy? By the time he realized what was happening, Ruby and Jody were too far gone. And in a way, that makes Kevin a survivor, too. Not the same kind of survivor as his kids, obviously, but a man who was gaslit, broken down, and manipulated into believing that he was powerless. And if he believed that, then he was. So where does that leave him now? Trying to prove that he's more than the man who left. Trying to show that he's someone worth forgiving. Since Ruby's arrest, Kevin has done everything he can to distance himself from her. He's filed for divorce. He's reconnected with his children. He's pushed for stronger child protection laws, advocating for better oversight of family vloggers so that kids who grow up on camera don't suffer the way his did. He's also suing Jody Hildebrandt for damages, because if she's responsible for tearing his family apart, then she should be held accountable for that too. And while all of this is happening, he's trying to rebuild his life. But here's the thing. No matter how many good things Kevin does from this point forward, no matter how many times he says he didn't know, there will always be people who believe he should have. Because even if Kevin was manipulated, even if he was trapped, even if he truly thought he had no way back in, his kids were still suffering. And when you're a father, when you choose to have children, it's your job to protect them. even when it's hard, even when you're scared, even when someone is telling you that you don't belong anymore. So, is Kevin Franka a monster? Is he innocent? Not entirely. He's a man who lost everything. The question now is, what does he do with what's left?
The neighborhood was picture perfect. Manicured lawns, kids riding bikes, friendly smiles exchanged over white picket fences. And then there was him, the guy who never made eye contact, the one who only left his house at night, dragging black trash bags to the curb, bags that sometimes twitched. He's just a little odd, they said. Just keeps to himself until the smell started. Until the missing pets turned into missing people. Until someone finally had the nerve to peek inside that basement window. And if they had only subscribed to True Crime Today Premium Plus on Apple Podcasts, they could have listened to Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi ad-free. And before everyone else, they could have recognized the warning signs. They could have gotten out. But they didn't. And now, they're part of the next episode. Don't make the same mistake. Subscribe now to True Crime Today Premium Plus on Apple Podcasts.
Extra Value Meals are back. That means 10 tender juicy McNuggets and medium fries and a drink are just $8. Only at McDonald's.
For limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. Prices may be higher in Hawaii, Alaska, and California and for delivery.